ESPN 970 and 97.5 The Zone is your source for the best Boise State information, interviews, and analysis. Now, The Zone presents the Obnug Podcast, the creators of Boise State's premier fan site. One Bronco Nation under God. Take over The Zone airwaves with their weekly podcast to spew their blue and orange fandom. The Obnug Podcast. Now, Drew Roberts and Jesse Baker.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Obnug Podcast, brought to you by KZNO in the zone.fm if you are so inclined to search them out on the web. And as usual, I'm your host Drew Roberts from obnug.com, joined by my pal and counterpart up there in Seattle. Probably a tad warmer in Seattle, I wager. Jesse Baker, how you doing, Jesse?
Hey, doing very well. It is a tad warmer, about 40 degrees up here, and I know a wall of rain is about to hit the next couple of days up here. So that could change, and I could get a little wet here in the next couple of days.
Well, speaking of getting a little wet, I came home at lunch today to find one of our external pipes had burst on our house, and so I got a little shower outside in the 15 degree Boise weather, so that was pretty fun, you know. So I think you're in for a treat when that rain comes in, man.
You're lucky that you didn't get frozen over like the Iceman from Italy.
Yeah, it's just, you know, one of the joys of homeownership. But speaking of the cold weather, Boise State had a cold one over the weekend. Both in terms of their first half performance and in terms of the temperature, kickoff temperature was 9 degrees, which according to those in the know was the coldest kickoff at Boise State in history. So, you know, I've been to some cold Boise State games, but that one was something else, Jesse. Maybe glad that you were in town for the Fresno game and not the San Diego State game.
Absolutely. I know that we had the windows open a little bit during the Fresno State game, and I hear that, you know, during this game they actually had to have the windows open because there was some fogging and some icing issues. One thing I do know is I will never be warming up shirtless on the blue. I don't know what kind of warm up I need as a pseudo semi-journalist. Mostly it's really warming up the typing fingers, but
yeah. Boise State trying to show their mettle out on the turf before the game, coming out shirtless was quite a sight. There was actually a couple of students in the student section that braved the elements shirtless. I believe they're being treated for hypothermia right now at St. Luke's, but anyway, we'll digress here a little bit and talk about SDSU after we open with our normal SNL weekend update style roundtable, where we talk about Bronco Nation and the news of the day. So, Jesse, why don't you start us off, man?
Yeah, like, as been a common occurrence throughout the season, our first bit of news has to do with Mr. Jay Ajayi, the redshirt junior running back for Boise State. This week, he was named as one of the 10 finalists for the Doak Walker Award. Really, I only know about that award because I generally try to get my running backs to win that in NCAA football 2014 when I played on Xbox. So it actually is pretty amazing to see that we actually have a Boise State player in real life going after that award. He's up against the likes of Amir Abdullah from Nebraska, James Conner of Pittsburgh, Duke Johnson of Miami for this prestigious award, as well as Melvin Gordon, who set the all-time single-game rushing record last weekend for Wisconsin. And the three finalists for this award will be announced Monday, November 25th, and they will go to Orlando for the ESPN and Home Depot College Football Awards show to find out who wins. So I think at this point, Mr. Ajayi has some work to do to get into that top three, but a good showing next couple of weeks might get him there.
Yeah, you know, at this point, I think that the fact that Ajayi is a semifinalist is a pretty big honor because, yeah, with some of the names on that list, I'm not really sure he's going to get the Orlando invite, but nonetheless, for him to be considered among the tops in the nation, a good honor for Ajayi. And, you know, probably won't have a chance to win it next year. Most of us think he's probably gone. But let's not talk about that. I'll get a little misty-eyed. So we'll move right on. Boise State had another Mountain West Special Team Player of the Week, their second straight honor. I think Boise State went about 4 years without winning a Special Teams Player of the Week award, and now have won it 2 weeks in a row. Kind of strange. Last week went to Dan Goodell. This week went to Special Teamer Chris Santini, backup linebacker for the Broncos and Special Teams Demon. If anyone watched the San Diego State game, you'll know why. But Santini executed a perfect fake punt, ran the ball 24 yards for a first down, really sparked the Broncos when they were kind of on the ropes to the Aztecs, and ended up, you know, completing the comeback, winning the game. So, yeah, it was. I thought it was kind of an interesting honor to give, for a guy that, you know, made one play, but, you know, it shows the importance of the play and just how meaningful it was to the Broncos on that night. So, Jesse, what else you got, man?
Yeah, Drew. Like we all know, the BCS is no longer in existence, and we have moved on to the days of the college football playoff. Well, now that we're in the latter part of the season, every week the college football playoff committee releases their top 25 teams, and each time they've done that, there's not been what they've deemed a group of five member among those 25. The group of five meaning that any team that is not in the Power Five conference, the Big 12, Big 10, ACC, Pac-12, and SEC. So any team outside of those are included in this group of five. Very important considering that the top group of five team does head to a New Year's Bowl to play against a really power team. So this is really important for teams like Marshall, Colorado State, and hopefully Boise State. But again, no team has been ranked in the top 25, and the committee has said that they will not divulge where the top group of five team is. So we have to wait a little bit. So even though that the rankings have not been released from the college football playoff, maybe some other polls will give us some light into who is leading. If we go to the coaches poll, Marshall is 18th, Colorado State is 23rd, and Boise State is 29th. In the Sagarin poll, BCS used this poll pretty frequently. Marshall is 33, Boise State at 39, and Colorado State at 50. The Massey, Marshall at 18, Boise State 29, Colorado State at 30. The ESPN Power Index has Marshall at 20th, Boise State at 41st, Colorado State at 54th. But a big consideration for the College Football Playoff Committee is strength of schedule. And in that respect, using the Sagarin strength of schedule, Boise State has a sizable lead over both Colorado State and Marshall. Marshall has one of the worst strengths of schedules in the country, if not the worst. Sagarin has them ranked at 141st. So pretty far down the list. The final ranking will be released December 7th, and it looks like until then, unless the Broncos or Marshall can really start swaying some of the voters on that committee, we won't know exactly who's going where until that final date.
Yeah, and I, you know, as a Boise State fan for years, you know, I don't want to jump on Marshall, and I don't want to put him down or anything like that. But yeah, if you have a chance, go and take a gander at Marshall's schedule. They are currently undefeated against a slate that I believe probably, you know, Boise State and half the Mountain West would be undefeated against as well. So not pretty there. But, you know, a good year for Marshall, and, you know, I hope they at least get some sort of recognition for what they're accomplishing. But yeah, that's a stinker of a schedule for sure.
Hey, Drew, I mean, I think you're forgetting that they played Old Dominion and Middle Tennessee back to back. I mean, that's a tough slate for anybody.
Is that so?
That was a joke.
Well, I was unaware of that. Well, maybe I should revise my my opinion of them a little bit there.
Followed by Florida International and Florida Atlantic. So that four game stretch right there.
That's murderer's row. Yeah.
Two home games, two away games. It's pretty incredible that they came out of there unscathed.
Yeah. In fact, it's never mind. We won't pile on.
I'm just stating facts.
Just take a gander, if you will. Avert your eyes, plug your nose, but take a look at that Marshall schedule when you have a chance. I will wrap things up here with some stats, as we've been known to do. We're coming right up against the commercial break, so we'll talk about a little bit of where Boise State stands through 10 games on the season. First and foremost, Boise State is 8-2 after sneaking by San Diego State on Saturday. Boise State has put up 5,089 yards of offense, and now that we've hit the 10-game mark, it's pretty easy to do these game averages if you know anything about math. So that obviously equates to 508.9 yards per game, a pretty good average, I would say, for Boise State, considering where they've been at the previous 2 years in the Robert Prince era. Boise State has rushed for 2,088 yards. The lion's share of those obviously going to Jay Ajayi, with Grant Hedrick and some of the other running backs chipping in. Passing yards, 3,001 for a 300-yard average per game. And, another thing that Boise State has slowly crept up on is the third down conversion percentage. Boise State now up to 45.4% and only allowing 37% of third down conversions to opponents. So that's another thing that was pretty atrocious last year. Definitely gotten better this year. Boise State with 27 sacks on the season. And another thing that's kind of crept up is the red zone scores. Boise State now scoring 87% of the time they are in the red zone, with 64% of those being touchdowns. So, offensive numbers obviously trending the right direction for the Broncos. Boise State offense clearly led by Jay Ajayi, who you mentioned before, Doak Walker semifinalist. He has 17 touchdowns on the year and eclipsed the 1,200-yard mark on Saturday. He now has 1,280 yards on the season and approaching 1,800 yards of all-purpose on the year. Your leading receiver at this point in time would be Thomas Spurbeck, and he finally was able to surpass Matt Miller, who's been out since the Air Force game. And Shane Williams-Rhodes is second with 517 yards, Thomas Spurbeck with 545. However, Shane Williams-Rhodes has a slight edge in touchdowns. He has 6, Spurbeck with just 2. And any other stats I can pull up here? I guess we should mention the defensive stats. Tanner Vallejo still leading the team in tackles with 62. There is a new number 2 on the team. Tyler Gray had it for the last couple of weeks. Darian Thompson, with a good two-game span there, has moved into second with 52 tackles. And, of course, your leader in tackles for the loss is Kamale Correa with 10.5. And he is also the sacks leader with 5.5. So some good stats all around. There's some bad ones in there, too. We can talk about after we talk about the San Diego State game. But overall, Boise State, about where you'd expect them to be for a team that's in contention for a title. And they are still in contention for that title based on the fact that they were able to sneak by San Diego State on Saturday. So when we come back from commercial, we will talk about that ad nauseum. And so we will be right back.
For all you Nuggies, visit www.obnug.com. The Obnug Podcast will be right back on KZNO, ESPN 970 and 97.5. And in the zone.fm. You're listening to ESPN 970 and 97.5 The Zone. Now, back to the Obnug Podcast with Drew Roberts and Jesse Baker.
And we're back, and we are talking San Diego State, the vaunted Aztecs from the sunny town of San Diego. If you watch Anchorman, you will know what the hidden meaning behind the town of San Diego is.
Discovered by the Germans, in 1904, they named it San Diego, which of course in German means a whale's vagina.
Once again, I will digress. We'll kind of dive into the game. Boise State, a little bit of a struggle at the beginning of that one. We're able to rebound and pull out a 38-29 win in the frigid temperatures of Albertson Stadium, attended by 27,478 fans, by the way, many of which left after the first couple of quarters, either to get in a nice warm bath or just because Boise State was laying a monstrous egg in the first half. So, Jesse, I'm sure you got to watch most of the game, if not all. Down 20 to nothing at one point in that one. No biggie. Were you worried? How exactly did that happen?
I was pretty worried. In fact, I was more worried during this game when it became 3-0 San Diego State than I was when we were down by 14 to New Mexico. There was just a feeling of uneasiness and awkwardness that I was sensing all the way here in Seattle. You know, like I mentioned in the last podcast, I was really confident about the New Mexico game just in terms of their flukiness. But the way that San Diego came out, they were playing well, stringing together a drive. Pumphrey broke the long run to make it at 10-0, and then to go up, and then a couple of interceptions by Grant Hedrick reared their ugly head, and I was a little bit worried. And you know, being able to finish the game on that 38-9 run was pretty impressive. And you know what won't go down as a super great game by any measure for the Broncos, but it was still pretty impressive to see them close it out.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you know, after the game, you know, being at the Harsin press conference, I mean, Harsin just kind of came in with this smirk on his face and just never was able to quite wipe it off, you know. So I know that obviously, you know, they had some tough game film to watch and obviously not completely pleased with the way the game played out. But you could tell that Harsin was just tickled, might be the right word, with how Boise State was able to respond and just kind of the heart of this team at this point. You know, Boise State has looked down a few times since the Air Force game, but have been able to rebound and kind of get things done when they need to, and you know, keep their title hopes alive. And I think that's the important part. That's number one on the Broncos pyramid of goals. And so it was good to see Boise State tested in that way and able to respond. A 20-point comeback was the biggest in Bronco history, at least as far back as 1988, which was as far as the stats most people were able to dig up. You know, and I completely agree with you. You know, Boise State being down 10-0 to San Diego State had a entirely different feel than Boise State being down 14 points to the Lobos, just because Boise State, you know, obviously had some stuff working for them offensively in that game. You know, in this game, that 3-3-5 defense just really seems to kind of flummox the Broncos, for lack of a better term.
You stay classy, San Diego.
And Grant, you know, came out of the gate looking rattled, just like he did last year. That pressure was coming from places he didn't know it was coming from. He was rushed into some throws, obviously threw a couple of interceptions. And if you go back and read the Obnug live tweet of the game, there was several times when I you know, tweeted a sense of urgency that the Broncos needed to turn things around quickly. And that was a bit earlier than most of the time you will see that, you know, people will say there's an urgency to Boise State scoring, just because Boise State just had nothing going at that point. And I knew if it continued, we'd be in big trouble. So thankfully, Boise State was able to get things rolling before halftime and then after with some pretty big plays. So what was the biggest play to you that was a real turning point in this one?
Well, for me, and where I was able to actually take a bit of a deep breath and relax a little bit, was the 46-yard circus catch by Chaz Anderson in the second corner. Up until then, the Broncos really hadn't had much going for them on the offensive end. And with that one pass, yeah, I mean, it showed a couple of things. It showed that, A, the Broncos could actually move the ball down the field and get it into the red zone, which they hadn't done yet. But kind of, you know, bigger picture, it was pretty exciting to see a wide receiver wide receiver not named Matt Miller go and fight for a ball. I mean, it wasn't, you know, caught very clean. But, you know, he reached over the defender, put his body into the defender to really fight for that ball. And that's really something that we've been missing from the secondary receivers for the better part of 4 years at Boise State. But that's a different issue. You know, that 46-yard pass got them into the red zone. And even though it only resulted in a field goal, it was just a little bit of relief. You know, we're not shut out anymore. The 20-0 lead is in the past. We can do some things against this offense. It was just, you know, a little bit of breaking the barrier, if you will.
Yeah, you know, I think that's definitely a very good turning point in that game. You know, it finally showed that Boise State was going to be able to at least muster up some sort of offense. You know, I'm going to go a little bit further into the second quarter when Boise State was able to score their second score of the night and cut the lead to 20-10, mainly just because Boise State executed that 2-minute drill just to perfection, as they've been had been known to do under Kellen Moore. It was nice to see that Hedrick could, you know, put together one of those, you know, quick scoring drives. There was some excellent catches by Shane Williams Rhodes in traffic on that same drive. One where he kind of climbed the ladder, another one where he took a big hit and held onto the ball and just kind of kept moving the chains. And, you know, so that was a big one to me. Also knowing that Boise State was going to get the ball after halftime, you know, I think it gave people a lot of confidence that, you know, maybe Boise State was going to be able to really close that gap that San Diego had built. Of course, Boise State was not able to score coming out of halftime, and San Diego was able to extend their lead by 3 points. But that's kind of when the Chris Santini magic happened, and Boise State never looked back. So, you know, a lot of turning points in the game, but I think there was definitely some big ones there that you mentioned and I just talked about. Obviously, some negatives in the game. What were your biggest positives in this one, do you think?
I'm going to go with the 221 rushing yards by Boise State as a whole. Good against that vaunted 3-3-5 defense. And, you know, after the game, J.H.I. took offense to some of Rocky Long's comments and, you know, calling them a spread team. And, you know, his comment was, we ran power down their throats. And I take that, those 221 yards, as a big positive. Especially as we close out this year. And another positive is just Grant Hedrick. Like I said previously, this wasn't his best game. I mean, it was far from it. Those two picks, he only threw for 187 passing yards. But, you know, the history with Grant is it's either feast or famine. You have insane games or you have very horrifying games. And this one was, you know, just perfectly satiating, if you will. It was, he did enough and played in control enough, especially in the second half, to win the game. And that's really important, as we saw, not trying to force it, not trying to do too much, maintaining control of the ball and just finishing out the game. And it was just really good that to get the victory, despite not having an all American type performance from the quarterback.
Yeah. It's good to see even keel Grant. For sure. Mm-hmm. You know, he's definitely kept a calm head, and you know, back-to-back weeks Boise State's kind of been a little bit on the ropes and reached points in the game where it was pretty much clutch time, and Grant, you know, executing on some key third downs and things like that, and you know, kept Boise State in the game against New Mexico, obviously a lot flashier, but yeah, it was good to see Grant do that. I had a couple of game balls that I gave out on Obnug. Darian Thompson got one of mine. He had 10 tackles for the team. He has 19 tackles in the last two contests. So, you know, when your safety is leading the team in tackles, that doesn't necessarily spell the best thing for your defense. But Thompson's definitely stepped up and provided some leadership there. He also was the interceptions leader for the Broncos. So, you know, having a pretty solid year there. I gave one to Shane Williams Rhodes. He didn't lead the team in receptions. In fact, far from it. He only had 4 receptions for 32 yards. But you know, he really showed some toughness there that I hadn't seen from him in the last few weeks. You know, making the tough grabs. Obviously, he's been a good weapon for us. But you know, hanging in there. You know, jumping up, making those difficult grabs and stuff like that. That was good to see, especially from one of your smaller guys. And, you know, I also gave one of the fans, you know, historically cold temperatures, a late kickoff. I know a lot of people, a lot's been made about these late kickoffs, and but the fans still showed up. They were loud. They were proud. Good job to the fans, all 27,000 of them, and maybe the 15,000 or so that were there by the time the closing whistle sounded. Now the bad part of things. What negatives do you see in this one, or at least, I mean, I guess specifically to this game, but maybe some trends that you're seeing of late for the Broncos that have you a little bit worried?
Well, I'll just say, like I already mentioned, the 187 passing yards. I don't think that this offense is built to have that low of a passing yardage number game in, game out. Really, this offense needs a little bit more through the air to be as effective as they need to be. Part of that, I think, has to do with my second point, is just the lack of tight end receptions kind of for the second game in a row. We haven't seen the tight ends show up as much as we had previously in the season, which was a little too bad. Would like to see them more involved in the game. And then just the biggest overall trend from, you know, the last two games is getting down in huge deficits in the first half. You know, as we get really down into November football, championship football, bowl games, you cannot get down as much as that, especially, you know, in the ways that they have, giving up the huge runs, just looking completely out of sorts, not showing up to games, and expect to have any chance to win. So they need to make sure, even more importantly, coming up in the next couple of weeks, is to get start fast, because it just has not happened from a margin on the other team in the last couple of games against New Mexico and San Diego State.
Yeah, strange trends afoot in Bronco football. Offense obviously enjoyed quite the resurgence after the Air Force game. Defense has kind of gone the opposite direction. It doesn't look like the vaunted run defense we saw at the beginning of the year. So hopefully some things get sorted out there sooner than later. Two regular season games left, and it's all on the line for the Broncos. Looking for a berth in the championship game. If they win out, looks like the championship will be held in Boise. So a lot on the line for the Broncos, and a lot on the line in Laramie this weekend. So we'll come back from break, and we'll talk a little bit about the Wyoming Cowboys and what exactly they can do to stop the Broncos. We'll be right back.
The Obnug Podcast will be right back on KZNO, ESPN 970 and 97.5, and InTheZone.fm. You're listening to ESPN 970 and 97.5 The Zone. Now, back to the Obnug Podcast with Drew Roberts and Jesse Baker.
And we are back for the third and final segment of the Obnug Podcast. This is the part where we talk about the upcoming game for the Broncos. And the upcoming game for the Broncos this week is Wyoming. So a bit of a, I guess it's not really a storied history with Wyoming, but even in our WAC days, we were crossing over and playing the Cowboys. So Boise State does have a little history with them. It's been fairly favorable to the Broncos. And it looks like it might stay that way, but you know, Boise State has had some surprising outcomes in games this year. Has started slow. Hopefully, the Laramie winter won't get to our Broncos. So it looks like game time temperatures considerably warmer than the Broncos faced against San Diego State. Maybe up into the 30s in Laramie. However, you've got that altitude up there, and also some nice little crosswinds that come through that stadium, potentially up to 20, 25 miles an hour. Last time I remember Broncos playing there in a real windy conditions was 2006, a game they should have won easily and did not win easily. They did win, however, I should state. But yeah, if you recall, 2006 was a bit of a magical year for the Broncos, but had to escape Laramie with a narrow victory to remain so. Laramie, November, good time had by all. If anyone's ever driven through Wyoming during the winter, you know what hell is like just a little bit. I believe Lavelle Edwards, the famed storied BYU coach at one point in time, was quoted as saying, "I'd rather lose and live in Provo than win and live in Laramie." So, of course, I would rather not live in Provo either, but that's just me. What do you think, Jesse? What's in store for our Broncos? Every football player's dream to play in Laramie in November, am I right?
Absolutely. I will say, Drew, you're always a grass is greener type of guy, and that's why you live in Boise. So you're a little bit smarter than those two folks. Maybe there's some craziness on the horizon. Maybe not. On one hand, Boise State is 8-0 all time against Wyoming. Last year, they trounced Wyoming 48-7, and then the closest margin was that 17-10 affair back in 06, which proves even an undefeated team needs to get into a couple fistfights along the way, which hopefully we're past those. Like I said, it's senior day there in Laramie. Temperatures are expected to be right around freezing, but no precipitation is expected. I think, you know, if anything, the Boise State players are acclimated to that cold weather from this past weekend. So I expect just a good, solid football game from the Broncos.
Yeah, and I don't know what to expect in this one. You know, Boise State has gone into Laramie. People have talked it up as a big, tight game, and Boise State has absolutely curb-stomped the Cowboys. And there's been other times when it's been considerably closer, even with the Kellen Moore-led teams against the Cowboys. So there's a couple games on Wyoming's schedule that I'd like to point to that give me a little bit of trepidation. Wyoming, by the way, is 4-6 on the year, 2-4 in conference. However, they did all the way back in at the beginning of September defeat Air Force 17-13. So, you know, obviously that's a loss that the Broncos took, a 28-14 loss in Colorado Springs. You know, that one gives me a little bit of trepidation there. Obviously, you know, that was kind of the outcome we were expecting against Air Force. Wyoming was able to get it done. The other one here is against Fresno State. This was just a couple of weeks ago. Fresno State defeated soundly by the Cowboys 45-17. As you remember, Boise State tied with Fresno at home going into the fourth quarter, a game where Boise State ultimately was victorious but struggled at times to contain Fresno's attack. There's some other games on here that you could look at and say gives you a lot more confidence. Obviously, the 3 points they put up last weekend against Utah State, or 2 weekends ago, I should say.
I'm going to say, Drew, that Boise State, every team that they play circles that game and says, we want to beat Boise State. We are excited. We are supremely stoked to play against the Broncos, either at home or away. Nobody looks at the Wyoming team on their schedule and says, man, I can't wait to face the Cowboys. It's just a fact of where the two football programs are. And so, I mean, I kind of call this the Gonzaga West Coast Conference syndrome, and in that teams always seem to play their best against, you know, the teams that get their lion's share of notoriety, the Boise State, the Gonzagas. Again, I don't think people really credit Wyoming for being the bellwether mark of their schedule.
No, and nor do I. But however, that little diatribe did not make me feel better against the game against the Cowboys. as I was saying, you could go through their schedule and look at some games that definitely do give you more confidence. They lost to Hawaii. They lost to San Jose State. They put up 3 points on Utah State. I mean, this is a 1-point win over Florida Atlantic. You know, this is not a powerhouse team, but they have been able to get up for a couple games. And as we know, if the team can get up for the Broncos and the Broncos play down to that level, you know, things don't always go as we plan. So, you know, we'll I'll just throw that out as my little bit of trepidation for this one, you know, before we get into too many X's and O's. But Wyoming does have a few players to watch, and I think if the Broncos are able to contain those players, it'll be a good day. But who's your top guy that the Broncos need to be wary of in this one?
Yeah, really, when I look at it, they've got two guys that are probably show up quite frequently, one on the offensive end and one on the defensive side of the ball. The offensive guy, sophomore running back Brian Hill, he's actually playing in place of the leading rusher, Sean Wicks, who is out. But against Fresno State, Hill rushed for 281 yards, and he also caught 3 passes for 106 yards. So putting up 387 yards of total offense is a huge, staggering number. It shows the kind of dynamite that Hill brings to the table. Then on the defensive end, I single out defensive end Eddie Yarbrough, who leads all Mountain West defensive linemen in tackles for losses and was a first-team All-Mountain West selection last year. So if anybody's going to create some problems for the Broncos, it's going to be those two guys.
Yeah, and you said Hill was a sophomore. He actually is a freshman, so averaging 6 yards per carry. Of course, all the damage he's done this year has been in the last 3 games. Prior to the Colorado State game, in which he rushed for 121 yards, the biggest offensive output he had was 18 yards, and that was in their opener against Montana. So, yeah, Brian Hill kind of came out of nowhere, but I think after the last 3 games where he's put up over 500 yards rushing, I don't think he's you know, somebody that's going to sneak up on the Broncos. If the Broncos tackle well against Hill, I think they'll do fine. But as we've seen in the last couple of weeks, Boise State has struggled with that a little bit. Sometimes it's the angles they're taking. Sometimes it's just wrapping up. So if Boise State can find the rhythm they had in the first 4 games of the year, I think that makes Wyoming pretty one-dimensional, because their quarterback, Colby Kierkegaard, senior, having an okay year, but you know, nothing to really write home about. He's only completing passes about a 57% clip. He's got 11 touchdowns on the season, 8 interceptions. So again, you know, a few weeks ago we might have been happy with those numbers from Grant, but nowhere near the yardage or percentage that Grant was putting up, even when Grant was on the wrong side of the touchdown interception ratio. So Kierkegaard not gonna really kill us with his arm unless we let him. And I think if we're looking at a crosswind there in the stadium, they're going to be putting the thing on the ground. So I think you're right. Hill's the guy to watch. And then, defensively, I think Wyoming obviously has a lot to prove. Last 2 games against freshman QBs, and they're going to come in here. Boise State's going to go in there, I should say, and bring in a redshirt senior who's been playing very well at the Chris Peterson mythical high level, if you will. And you feel like there's big advantages the Broncos might have in this one, and maybe some disadvantages. I should throw out rushing yards so far for Wyoming. They are ranked 72nd in the country and 75th in passing yards, so they're kind of right in the same ballpark with both. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I think the biggest advantage for Boise State is, you know, really a big weakness of Wyoming in that they don't have the ability to really force turnovers. We've seen that the big bugaboo for Boise State has been those turnovers in plenty, in groups, and can they come consecutively, it seems. But Wyoming ranks, 94th in the country at forcing turnovers. They only have 2 interceptions. I think that bodes very well for this Boise State team. And then the disadvantage, like you said, for the Broncos is their rushing attack You know, Wyoming is a power rushing team. It's, you know, in the first year under Craig Bohl, it's taken some time to really find their legs, which is a kind of a pun. But the Boise State defense at times has looked really well, or has looked really good, would be the correct grammar, against the run. And at other times, the opposing offenses look like they're playing against air. And yes, I'm talking about New Mexico.
All right. Well, I think you might have inadvertently jinxed us with your turnover talk, because that was the big talk going into the Air Force game. The Air Force was not good at creating those turnovers, and of course, Boise State committed 7 of them. So, well done, Jesse. Way to jinx the team. Oh, no response to that? Okay, well, I'll just move on. biggest keys to the game for you, and then we'll wrap this thing up, man.
Well, I guess since you put me on the spot, Drew, I better say limit the turnovers as much as possible. I think that one's pretty obvious. They also need to stop the run, protect Hedrick. I think things will go very well for the Boise State Broncos there in Laramie.
I agree. And I'm also going to throw out the tried and true score more points than the other team tactic, which Boise State failed to execute against Air Force and Ole Miss, but has successfully executed in 8 other contests this year. So,
is that a tactic or is that a strategy?
I'm not sure. Is it a program? Is it a campaign? It's one of those things. At any rate, the Broncos need a key win this weekend. Hopefully they'll get it. And spurring them to victory will be you, Jesse, as you wrap things up with your best go Broncos.
Go Broncos, except I'm going to go back to a little bit of news. Bronco Nation, another Boise State team needs your support, and that is the women's cross-country team, as they had 2 nationals. They were one of 18 teams across the nation to automatically qualify for the NCAA championships. They compete on Saturday, November 22nd, this upcoming Saturday. It's going to be a huge day in Bronco sports. Of course, we have this Wyoming football game. We also have a pretty important basketball game up in Madison, Wisconsin, against the number 3 ranked team in the nation. So those 3 teams go into battle. Go Broncos. Let's get the victories.
Absolutely. Talk to you next week. I should have been a cowboy.
I should have learned to rope around. Obnug. 1 Bronco Nation. Under God. You're listening to ESPN 970 and 97.5 The Zone. For all you Nuggies, visit www.obnug.com. Singing those campfire songs. Oh, I should have been a cowboy.